Welcome to Manager Tools. Today's topic, how to handle meeting killers, part two, the Dominator. Here we go. Okay, so today we're gonna continue our conversation about the meeting killers and how to deal with them, and talk specifically about the Dominator.
Right.
But before we start, we ought to tell folks we have a special guest today.
We do. Our good friend, Mark Granger, a managing director at Credit Suisse, the investment bank here in Manhattan, where we're recording today. Say hi, Mark.
Hi.
We're very excited Mark's here. And what we're going to do on this cast, we're trying something different. Mike and I are going to record the cast. And at the end of the cast, we're gonna have a little discussion with Mark about his experience with Manager Tools, both as an individual manager and executive, and also in terms of his role at Credit Suisse with the organization. So Mark's gonna sit quietly for a little bit, sitting about 2 feet from us. Have we ever done this before?
No, I don't think
anybody's ever listened in on a cast.
Oh yeah, we have. We did it at a conference one time. We recorded
that. Oh, that's right, in San Jose,
which was a lot of fun.
Good. Okay, good.
But not in a kind of intimate setting.
Now, okay. now he knows. Now he's paying attention to the man behind the green curtain, right?
There you go. Yeah, he saw us struggling to figure out how we're going to do
the
this.
The technology. Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so let's continue our conversation from last weekend about meeting killers,
right?
And the Dominator. And
Well, let's set it up a little bit. The 15 May 2012 edition of the Wall Street Journal had an interesting article. There were some good things and some bad things in it, called "Meet the Meeting Killers." And actually, when I read the article, I got frustrated the way I often do. But what I liked about it was they were talking about specific people and what they did in meetings. So after a fashion anyway, it hinted at behavior, right? And they said things that they did, but they tend to characterize them kind of generally. And I thought, wait a minute, this is what managers all over the world wonder. What do I do with this person when they do X or Y or Z? And even though I didn't like all of the titles they used, I thought, this is close enough, and we can address it. And it's a great one that we're doing the Dominator here with somebody from the investment banking world listening in, because oftentimes investment bankers can be forceful with their opinion.
That happens? Really?
Oh, yes.
Oh, okay.
So we thought what we'd do is break down the article and give everybody, hey, if this behavior happens in a meeting, here's the way to address it. Right, the Manager Tools way, as opposed to the Wall Street Journal way, and we think our way is better.
Okay, so this particular article, it wasn't clear to you what they were suggesting the response to the Dominator.
Yeah, actually, what happened was, not only was the response not clear, they kind of danced around it in a couple of different ways. The Dominator itself, the name, is only mentioned in a caption. And they give him or her, the person who's doing this, a rating of a first-degree nuisance, 3 red boxes out of 3, says this person disrupts discussion. But they don't actually say, okay, here's what to do. And that's not unusual in popular press when it comes to managerial behaviors. They address it, they touch on it, but I think most managers read articles like that and go, they gave one example, and I'm supposed to do exactly what that person did in the example, because what about other things that a Dominator might
do?
They
don't go back to first principles.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's a good way to put it. Yeah. There is a story that I think is meant to represent the Dominator, where a woman's presenting in front of the room. Somebody gets up in the middle of a presentation and actually approaches the front of the room. Now, I don't know. Has that ever happened to either one of you? Mark, has that ever happened to you? Sitting around a conference table, a guy in the front of the room, and somebody else gets up and says, I disagree with you, and I'm going to show you how you're wrong?
I've seen that.
It's pretty rad to me.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen it. I mean, I've seen a CEO stand up and say, we're done with the conversation.
I haven't seen anybody go to the front of the room and literally displace the presenter. Right. But I've seen people stand up behind their chair
and
take command.
Okay, that makes sense.
Which is a minor variation. Right.
But on the other hand, if everybody's peers, it's one thing if the EVP stands up, fine, and says, conversation's over, we're fine. But peers and a peer who's being briefed, let's say you and I are peers and Mark's our boss, and you're presenting, Mark's at the head of the table, and you're presenting, and I stand up and walk to the front of the, that's just to me is bizarre.
After the meeting?
I would have deserved it. Okay. So anyway, this guy gets up and starts approaching the front of the room, tells the presenter she's wrong, and Mark says he's seen it happen sometime. Mike and I are a little flabbergasted, but anyway, to her credit, in the story, the presenter speaks to the intruder and says, "Hey, I think you're making a real good point, but I want to finish first so we can talk about my ideas, and then we can talk about yours if we have time." And I have to say, well done.
Well done. Yeah.
Well done. That said, this is one of those cases in journalism where the story they present, okay, that's a great response, but that happens so rarely. Let's talk more generally about people who try to dominate meetings. What do you do? How do you handle it? And so on. In this case, this person was just incredibly rude. And the thing that frustrates me when I read it, now, look, I know I'm the only guy who does this, but I read articles like this thinking managers are out there in the world trying to learn how to be better managers. And what frustrates me is they don't even make a mention of the meeting leader. Right.
The role of the meeting leader to tell the person to say, hey, Bob,
Right, exactly. Didn't even say, right? So that is absolutely the meeting leader's role in this situation. So in this particular case, and then we're going to expand a little bit more, our recommendation is not to leave this to the presenter. If somebody interrupted, we recommend you as the meeting leader, right? Not as the presenter, but as the meeting leader, speak up. Here's what you'd say. You'd say, hey, Cameron, if Cameron's the guy who's interrupting, Cameron, not sure what you're doing here, but please sit back down. Let's hear from Sarah first. If we have time, we'll hear from you and from other people, okay? And I feel like the meeting leader let this presenter down by not addressing it. Because in general, you could leave this to a facilitator, but generally speaking, if you're leading the meeting, there's an assumption that you're also facilitating the meeting, getting the things done that need to get done in the time you have for the meeting. Now, I know that's not true in a lot of places, but fundamentally, I think most people assume the head person or whoever called the meeting has some obligation to facilitate logistically that things get done appropriately.
And they may do it poorly, but they're still responsible. Now, I like in your response there the if. Right, if we have time.
Yeah,
right?
It's not.
I don't think that's insignificant. The part.
Yeah, there's a theme from people who are forceful, who want to dominate things, that what they would say in hindsight, or what they would say after in a situation like this, is meetings are a chance for communication, and hey, more communication is better, and hey, if an idea can't stand up to scrutiny, it's not good enough to be implemented, and conflict makes things better, and let's hash it out, And you know, it is literally their way of justifying their ineffective, inefficient, rude, and frankly, team-destructive behavior. And it's all stuff, these are all phrases that are technically true, but when you hear somebody put together ten phrases that are true to address a behavior that everyone else kind of gets creeped out by in a meeting, it's like, no, it's fallacious logic, right? It's out of context. So meetings are not free-for-alls, guys. Not all voices get to be heard all the time. And folks, not hearing some voices, not every idea needs to or deserves to be at the table. If work was done and we brainstormed for a couple of weeks and we threw a bunch of stuff on the wall and we narrowed it down to five, when you're down to five, you don't get to bring back up number 31 in the brainstorm session and say, I think this is missing the point. You don't. And if you're the meeting leader and you know that work has been done, you're obligated to say, no, Bob, or no, Cameron, I know you want to talk about that. We already decided we're not going to do that. And I think the vast majority of meeting leaders, even with their directs, when one of their directs steps up and does that, not in this particular example, but just says, I want to go back to something we talked about last week, the meeting leaders, a lot of managers don't realize their job is to say, no, no, no. We already went from 1,000 down to 5, and now we're looking at the final two. You don't get to reintroduce number 5 or number 451. We know you like that. It's too late now. Well, I'm afraid this is not good. And fine. It's too late now.
Noted.
Noted. So noted. Yeah. Your objection is noted. Carry on, counselor. Right. And look, that's not stifling debate. Okay, that's recognizing that there are contexts involved in almost everything we do at work. You know, early on in an effort, more ideas are better. Okay, bringing up a previously discarded idea, you know, an idea that's been, and it's always by the guy who's in charge, it's not effective. And I think people think they can get away with that kind of behavior. One person's opinion of the incredible value of an idea, particularly it's their idea, doesn't justify ignoring the rules in the process that you're at. Now, if somebody wants to to in a brainstorming session, say, I really believe this is the best one, although that's not a great brainstorming technique. I don't have any problem with that. But at this point, when we're presenting an idea to decide whether or not we're going to do it, tearing it down and standing up and trying to take over a meeting, dominating the meeting, so to speak, is not effective at
all. Right. And if you as a meeting leader, if you tell the you do it politely. I mean, politely to basically shut up and sit down. Let them get their feelings hurt. That's their problem at this
point. How you feel is your fault, and they got poked with a your idea is too late umbrella, and they got their feelings hurt all by themselves. Look, everything, like I said, everything has context. It may be that now's not the time. Now, we're not saying, guys, that you should run your meetings with an iron fist, but it is a recommendation. We are making a recommendation that we see that meetings are easily ruined, and they take leadership. And they take ground rules, and you need to consider the context. And if somebody's doing something that you don't like and you're a meeting leader, trust yourself. And sometimes enforce ground rules, even though it may feel like you're publicly pinching somebody in order to get where you need to go. But this is not everybody gets to talk whenever they want, okay? Okay, but now, as I said, that's kind of a little bit more detailed than obviously what the journal went into. But let's expand this a little bit to the kinds of things a dominator might do in a meeting.
Yeah,
right?
Behaviors. What are the behaviors of a dominator?
She might interrupt repeatedly, okay? She might respond to somebody else's idea by immediately pointing out the negatives in a disparaging way. They're saying things like, that won't work, or we tried that before, can't believe you don't remember it, or you've forgotten, we don't have any budget for that, or surely you don't think that'll work, okay? And obviously, in all those examples, the behavior is disruptive. It may be true, and there are plenty of dominators who will defend their statements with truth. And folks, let me just tell you something. If you tear down the team, the truth of something is not a defense. It's not. People always want to do that. We see this in technical people all the time. You can't do what you're talking about doing. And when you take them to task, they say, well, it's true. You can't. I know it's true. But the fact that you said it the way you did to the customer ticked the customer off, and we have an obligation to maintain relationships. That obligation is not such that you maintain the relationship and lie and say, of course we can do that billion-dollar satellite project for $12, right? We're not going to say that. But you don't speak truth and see a relationship burn to the ground and then defend yourself by saying, well, I was just being truthful. There's a way to be truthful and effective at the same time, as an example. So what do you do?
Yeah, well, let me interject something a little bit, because I think a lot of managers sometimes, they feel as if, like, the dominator, that's their personality, right? Who Cameron is, right?
Yeah.
And they feel like, and he, like, everybody understands his personality, and I just got to let him go. And that's not true. It's affecting the performance of the team, and if you don't address it, right? If you don't address it, you're complicit in Cameron. In this case, Cameron's lack of ability to grow, right? Because this is a behavior that is not going to work.
I would go further, and I'll point the finger at me as well here. You're not really complicit with Cameron not growing. Cameron thinks you are justifying his behavior when you don't address it.
Yeah.
If in fact he behaves in an aggressive way that somebody, we're going to call it the dominator, right? That aggressive, that high D, that kind of assertiveness that's rough around the edges and hurts people's feeling. If you don't address it because you say, oh, that's just Cam's personality and it serves me well in other situations, so therefore I want it to I'm going to allow it to happen here. He believes you're saying it's okay what he's doing. And what we have to do is shave off the rough edges so he can still be assertive, because assertiveness can be helpful at times, but also that he can do it in a context that makes it so he does not turn down the team. And I'm sure there are listeners who are listening right now who would say, I could see Mark being the kind of guy that would dominate a meeting. And I wouldn't argue with that. I can understand why you draw that conclusion.
Where would they get that? Yeah. I don't know. I don't understand.
Okay, but here's the thing.
You just interrupted me. See, there you go again, dominating.
Yeah. I feel bad about it, too. I assure you.
I can see.
But you know as well as I do, we're in meetings all the time. And I facilitate meetings. And I ask other people for their points of view. And if we think, we have an obligation to ask our directs to think about context. And if they miss out on a context that this is not the time for that behavior, it's our obligation as bosses, as leaders, as managers to address it.
Yeah. So I just want to point that out, because I think this is one of those areas where managers often tell us, well, I don't know there's really that much opportunity to give feedback. It's like, well, here's one of them, right?
Yeah. So Last week, when we talked about the Jokester, which is my least favorite name of a cast ever, I think, we talked about the fact that you don't want to hammer, you don't want to give negative feedback, you don't want to address Jokester behavior too quickly. You want to wait for there to be a pattern. This week is different. When it comes to Dominators, you don't need to wait for a pattern. Okay, that kind of behavior, the kind of aggressiveness, the kind of cutting people off, interrupting, being disrespectful of other ideas, attempting to dominate a conversation, attempting to shut off debate on something or go back to old something that's already been decided because it was their idea. That kind of behavior is immediately corrosive. It's unprofessional. If this person works for you, it's time for feedback. Now, obviously, if we're in the middle of a meeting and Horseman is doing Dominator stuff and Ozan is his boss, you wouldn't give me feedback in the middle of the meeting. You'd wait until after the meeting, okay? And here's some examples. Let's reverse the roles. You be the direct. I'll be the boss. You are the Dominator, right?
Okay.
And I'll come up to you and say, hey, can I give some feedback?
Sure, boss.
Yeah. When you say, I can't believe you think that'll work, it's rude, Mike, and it's unprofessional. Can I count on you to stop that for me?
Sure.
Okay, good. Another one. Can I give some feedback?
Sure.
When you interrupt Taylor, it's really not helpful to our discussions. Mm-hmm. I know you probably didn't mean it, but anyway, can you change that?
Sure. Okay.
Cool. Or, hey, can I give some feedback?
Yeah.
Mike, when you say you can't believe Robert thinks something will work, that's probably not disagreeing. I would characterize that as attacking, which is not really helpful. It's not effective. Can you change that for me?
Sure.
Good. Okay.
I didn't even do it, and I want to push back.
Really? Okay, so in what way do you want to push back?
Well, okay, give me the last one. This is a little feedback example. Maybe it's
right?
You know,
a little bit more detail.
About thing, but okay, go ahead.
Hey, can you give some feedback?
Sure.
When you say you can't believe Robert thinks something will work, I see that as not just disagreeing. I see that as attacking Robert. I don't think it's terribly effective. Can you change that for me?
Did you hear his idea? Is that like the stupidest thing you've ever heard? I mean,
well, okay.
It's true. That was stupid.
Okay, hold that thought for a second. First, let's get to the crux of the matter. Are you willing to change that?
Change a stupid idea? I can't change a stupid idea.
No,
he has stupid ideas all the time. I can't do anything about that.
Yeah, okay. And at this point, folks, I could do one of two things. I could say, well, Mike, let's not worry about it anymore, and I'll walk away. I'll do shot across the bow, and I'll walk away. Or I could engage a little further, and I'll say, let's start with one thing at a time. I've given you some feedback about your behavior. Mm. I've told you that kind of behavior is ineffective. Can you change that for me? Can you work on that a little bit?
Yeah, I can do.
Okay. Now come back. Now, you're saying that what Robert said won't work, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a moron.
Can I give some feedback, Mike?
Yes.
When you call Robert a moron, it really ticks me off. Can we do that better?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And going back to the original point, even if you think something won't work, Mike, the question is, can we work together a year from now? Can anybody on the team work together if you're going to say, well, I'm right, when in fact you may have been right and it's tearing down the team?
Mm.
And you don't get to always be right and tear down the team.
Mm. I didn't think about it like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with it. In fact, I'm not going to agree or disagree with you at all. That's the whole point. I'm not going to argue with you. I'm just going to say, even if you're right, it doesn't matter. And we could argue, but I'm not going to. It doesn't matter. It tears down the team. You end up, and if you do that to somebody other than Robert, somebody who doesn't have Robert's backbone, that person won't say anything for 2 or 3 days. And no offense, you and I have good ideas, but so do other people. And we don't want to not hear from them, right?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So, folks, that works. That kind of direct feedback works for your directs. Okay. And you would do that after the meeting. You wouldn't do it in the meeting. If you're listening to this for the first time, you don't know what feedback is, obviously go to our basic series and listen to the cast about feedback. We have a 4-step feedback model. It's very, very effective. But we also said in these casts that we would talk about how to handle
peers, right?
Peers, project meetings, right? Where you're not the leader. People ask us that all the time. So, in that case, it's just peer feedback. So if you and I are peers, or you're on a project team with me, maybe we're distant peers, and I have no connection to you at all. I'm in marketing, you're in IT. I'm in IT, you're in marketing. I'm in IT, you're in operations. I'm in operations, you're in finance. It doesn't matter. And you've been engaged in some of this interrupting, this rudeness, mm-hmm. this dominator kind of behavior that's out of context, ineffective, inefficient for this kind of meeting. We're gonna do some peer feedback.
Sure.
Practice.
Okay.
Okay.
So I'm the person doing.
You're the dominator.
I'm the dominator.
You're the dominator. I'm I'm going to be the project team lead, but nevertheless...
But we're at the same
level. We're peers, yeah. And so you don't think of yourself as reporting to me, even though ultimately...
Yeah, but you're running the
I'm running the project, okay. Yeah, and I'm running the meeting as well, yeah. Okay. And as we're walking out, I say, hey, Mike, I don't know if you've noticed, but when you say... It's the dumbest thing I ever heard. It's probably too strong. Probably hurts the team a little bit. I thought you'd want to know that.
Well, okay, thanks.
Yeah, sure, no problem. Or another one. We're walking out again, and I say, hey, Mike, something I've noticed, when you interrupt Taylor, it kind of shuts other people down. Just a thought for you.
No, cool. I didn't recognize that. Okay,
yeah.
Thanks.
I do it, too. I'm not saying that you're wrong.
Yeah.
I'm just saying I've learned it's probably better
for guys
like us not to shut people down.
Yeah, no, that's not good.
And now, again, we're walking out. We'll give a third one. Hey, Mike, something to consider about meetings.
Mm-hmm.
When you say you can't believe Robert thinks something like that will work, even if I agree with you, it just makes my job harder getting Robert to share ideas. And other people kind of feel like if their ideas are going to get hammered, then they might share them as much. So I could probably use some help there in terms of just shaving off the rough edges.
Yeah, it was a stupid idea, but I probably shouldn't have said that.
Yeah, that's all I'm asking.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. That's all. It's all. It's peer feedback. That's all it is. I don't ask you first. I don't ask you to change your behavior at the end. All I'm doing is putting the data out there and saying, hey.
And you're people can't see this, but you're smiling when you're telling me this, right?
It's a
relaxed kind of conversation. It's not like you're hammering me. That doesn't work.
And if you went off on me, it'd be total shot across the bow. I'd walk away in a second because I got no leverage. I got no shot with you.
Right.
And if you do that, then that just means I'll have to facilitate a little bit harder. But in addition, ground rules are a huge help in this situation.
In terms of stopping the domination from happening in the first
place. The way to reduce a lot of this, and we're going to talk about this in all these series of casts, and people are going to get tired of it, but I got to tell you, I do training all over the country year-round, and if you take 5 minutes in the beginning and put some ground rules in effect, once a year, I forget to do ground rules, and I feel like, what is wrong with this group? Well, what's wrong with them is we've not given them any context that says there are some things that we probably ought to avoid. We can all avoid, and it'll make us 15, 20% more effective. And if you put 30 people in a room, 20% more effective over the course of the day is enormous, right? As opposed to just it being a free-for-all.
Right.
The whole one-at-a-time ground rule, I think, is really important. And so if someone interrupts, as dominators are likely to do, they're violating that one-at-a-time rule. Listening actively is another ground rule that I would recommend. If you think you're going to have dominators in a meeting that you're running, having that listening actively ground rule reduces the likelihood that dominators are going to be problematic. Now, are some of them going to ignore the ground rule? Sure they are. But let's at least put it in place because the ground rules become a bit like a sergeant at arms of the meeting, and it's not you enforcing things.
You can just point to the ground rule.
Exactly. They have an additional power, which kind of is separate from you. If you've started your series of project meetings, or even your team meetings, with them, right, you can actually address the behavior that someone is engaged in, like a dominator, during the meeting, without resorting to feedback. And of course, feedback you can only give later in a more private setting. When somebody like a dominator interrupts or dismisses an idea with malice, you address it right then and there by enforcing the ground rules. And it's not feedback, but this works like a charm. And by the way, the more humor you can put into it, the better, right?
Exactly.
If Charles is talking and Brian interrupts him with, are you kidding? No way. Too many customers love this feature. We can't change it. You say, hey, Brian, sorry, ground rules say no interrupting. Go ahead, let him finish, and be nice about it when you let him finish, right? And I just turn a chuckle. And again, that's not feedback. That's you behaving as a leader, insisting that certain reasonable prescriptions on any possible behavior are followed in the meeting. It's simple.
Right. And everybody agreed to the ground rules at the beginning of the meeting.
Absolutely. So
it's just you're just asking somebody to follow through on the commitment they've made to the group.
Exactly. Right. And in this particular case, if Brian works for you, your call whether you give him private feedback later or not, right? We probably wouldn't recommend you do it the first time. The whole point of the ground rules is let's see whether or not he steps up to the ground rules. The second time a direct went overboard and became a bit of a dominator, I'd probably recommend you enforce the ground rules. Say, hey, Brian, one of the ground rules is don't interrupt, or one person at a time, so hold your thought, and then be nice when you share it. And then I'd probably give him private
feedback.
Yeah, exactly. For a non-direct, though, in a project meeting, I would wait a couple, probably three times before I gave the private peer feedback. I just wait a little bit longer. Again, with ground rules introductions, and ground rules are even better in project meetings because the lack of clarity about role structure and power, the ground rules become a form of role structure and power in a project meeting that make it easier to keep it enforced.
Well, because I think there's two different sets of responsibilities we're talking about here. One is if you're the manager or the leader, right, of your direct, then you're responsible not only for ensuring the appropriate behavior in that meeting that you're running, but also future performance,
exactly.
Right? Other meetings,
exactly.
Right? You're developing the person. If they're a peer, well, you're not responsible for developing them, and the ground rules allows you to enforce behavior in the meeting, which is really what you're worried about.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, look, if it's a peer situation, hopefully the ground rules being referred to will get the right behaviors, and if they don't, after three instances, like I said, then it's time for peer feedback. Now, this is the question we always get. Okay, fine, that's my peer. You know, I'm a manager, he's a manager. What if he's a more senior person? What if he's an executive vice president, right? Look, guys, okay. I answer this question the same way every time, and people are like, oh, okay, so you're saying that it really doesn't matter that people in power can do anything they want. No. I'm not saying that, but look, if it's a much more senior person and you don't have a relationship where you feel you could talk to them and they're behaving badly outside the rules, periodically, not every time, you don't want to be an enforcer of the ground rules in his or her face, remind him or her about the ground rules, but ultimately, put that in your Delta file, breathe in, breathe out, move on, let go. You are not going to change that person's behavior. Let us not fall on our sword. Let us not be Don Quixote. You're not going to win, and if you're not careful, you'll get smacked by somebody senior in front of the rest of the project team. And you know, in Asian cultures, we'd say you lost enough face that you would have less ability to govern, if you will, moving forward. And you know, the world's not perfect. And it's too bad things are that way. And that's right. The way the world
you gotta
is.
You got to let that go.
Yeah, exactly.
Just fantasize about creating a new TV series called Managers Behaving Badly or something like
that. Yeah, exactly. Or Executives Behaving Badly.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, good.
Awesome.
That's it.
All right. Thanks, man.
You bet.
So
good.
So okay, so let's go on to the special section of this podcast, and let's talk with Mark Granger.
So Mark, take a minute, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Well, thanks guys for this opportunity. I'm thrilled to be here. I'm Mark
Granger.
You're
the only third person the third voice ever, not us.
In very esteemed company. I really appreciate that. So I'm Mark Granger. I'm based here in New York City. I work for Credit Suisse. I'm a managing director in the human resources function, and I support the investment banking department of Credit Suisse globally. I've been there for 4 years now, and I've been a listener of Manager Tools probably for about the same amount of time, 4 years.
So start telling us about your experience as an individual manager. You hearing our tools.
Sure.
Which ones did you use? Which worked? Which did you like?
Yeah.
What got you interested? What happened when you implemented them?
Yeah, I really don't know how I found Manager Tools. I'm sure it was a Google search for manager training, and I was
starting. We're so good at marketing.
Right, yes, indeed. Yeah. I started to listen to your podcast as I ran, and I run a lot. Yeah. So, you know, I would go for a run for an hour or so, listen to a couple of podcasts, and over time just
started. So exciting, you ran a lot faster.
Well, it helps the time go pretty quickly, which was great. And over time, I started thinking, you know, this is kind of interesting. And it went from being interesting ideas to, hey, I should be doing some of this stuff. I should be trying some of this stuff. And so, you know, I started with, I already ran one-on-ones every week. And what I think Manager Tools gave me was actually, here's how you can structure your one-on-one.
Right.
And you know, I was giving feedback. What I found is I was probably getting into arguments with my direct reports. They were getting defensive. And over time, I started to understand that was because I wasn't being specific enough. And there were sometimes when I actually didn't need to win the argument and I could issue the shot across the bow, as you talked about earlier. So, you know, over time, I just found myself using more and more of your content. And in my role as someone who's focused on helping bankers get better, I started to use some of your content in my conversations with the people that I worked with before. And so that kind of led to, you know, one thing led to another. We became heavy users of DISC.
Right.
And we got very focused on behaviors and the kind of micro communications and all the effective behaviors that you guys talk about. We then, I think, made contact with you probably 2 years ago now, at least, probably more than that. We had you come and kind of do some sessions mm-hmm. with us in multiple groups across our investment banking division. And then we ended up licensing your content. Right. And now we have Credit Suisse employees who are trained up in your content, teaching our employees in 1 hour management right. sessions. And it's great. And it's working well. And it's got huge momentum.
Yeah. So people, I think people have this idea, wrong in many cases, about what the investment banking environment is like.
Sure.
And I think people go like, well, I'm sure that didn't go over very well. So how are folks responsiveness to this?
Yeah, I think investment bankers specifically are not hired to be because they're great managers. They're really not. They're great bankers, or at least we hope they're great bankers. Yeah. As they get more senior, they need to direct the work of more and more people, and they need to build relationships and get things done through and with other people. So our bankers understand that intuitively. What they struggle with is, so they want to do this kind of management stuff, but they don't. They need to know what to do because no one's ever told them what
right.
to do, and they don't want it to take too much time
yeah.
and get in the way of the core revenue generating activity they do. And so what we find with manager tools is we check both boxes. We tell them exactly what to do and how to give feedback, and we give them ways to do this that doesn't take a lot of time, that they can
right.
get done very quickly. And they're very responsive. They're by nature skeptical, so we'll get a lot of challenging questions, and you know, we'll have the back and forth, and at the end of the session we say, okay, so are you going to use this stuff or are you not? And,
and
people will put their hand up and say, yeah, we're going to do this.
So the fact that it's not like a typical book on management that you find in the bookstore
right.
where
it's all
theory and fluff
yeah.
and you get through it and you go like, what do I do? Well, what I do is I focus on going back and being a better banker because it doesn't tell me what to
yes.
do around
yeah.
management. This
absolutely.
Is different, right? It's the actionable nature of it that makes it useful.
Absolutely right. And we have them practice and they struggle with it just like everyone
yeah.
else does when they start, and then they get better. And then, you know, the most satisfying part of my job, frankly, is when a banker emails me and says, you know, as you
yeah.
joke about, Mark, you'll never guess what happened. I gave someone feedback and
it worked.
I'm like, yeah, well, that's what we expected.
I want to share something. We had breakfast a little while ago before we recorded this cast, and you shared what you were doing, which I had known, but you reminded me of it, which is because you're licensed in material, you guys are able to present internally.
Yep.
Share with the audience what you guys do. You have an hour-long session about
yep.
feedback, and tell them the structure that you guys have come up
sure.
with. It's different than the way we do it,
yeah.
but I really like this structure. In an hour, you put them through sort of, I think, three or four phases.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, and folks, if you're a manager, just think about this. Put yourself in Mark's shoes in terms of
yeah.
how you could use this with
yeah.
your folks.
You don't have to be in HR doing
yeah.
it for the entire organization.
Right.
You could do this with your people. If you're a director, you could do it with your managers, for instance.
Yeah, yeah. So feedback is a good example, and we ran a one-hour session yesterday, myself as the HR guy with a senior business person in front of 50 Credit Suisse employees. And the way the hour runs is we basically tell them what the model is, the feedback, the four-step feedback.
Walk them through the model.
Walk them through
sure.
the model. Then we show them. We literally give feedback, and we give positive and negative feedback very quickly. I think I did six pieces of feedback in 60 seconds. Then we have...
The 60 seconds thing
yep.
stuns them. I remember
sure.
telling a
yep.
group of bankers, I think it's been 3 years ago I was there, and I said to them, I'm not going to try to make you a great manager. I don't
right.
want to. I know what you want to be is a great banker,
sure.
but you do need to know how to do some basic managerial
yep.
stuff. And when they see that feedback thing done in 10 seconds,
yeah.
they assume it's going to be a debate. They
right.
assume it's going to
yep.
be sit down in my office,
absolutely.
Have a 15-minute discussion about some minor thing that happened, and everybody blows it off. They say, oh, I don't have that much time for that. And then they
yep.
see the 10-second thing. So I'm
yep.
sorry. I interrupted.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
Yeah. No, so we tell them, then we show them, then they get a chance to practice, and we have scenarios that
right.
we've built
right.
that are specific to their real life examples that these guys basically shared with us
yeah.
as we design the content. And then we have them stand up and practice in groups of three, and we go around and give them help and support. And then the final piece is they actually plan, and we literally have a piece of paper that says, who are you going to give feedback tomorrow, positive feedback,
yeah.
and then what are you going to say? Can I give you some
yeah.
feedback? When you do this, this happens, thanks, keep it up. And we literally have them write it out. And then we say, if you've got time, and if we have time, if we've got 5 minutes, then do a negative.
Right.
This is the coolest part, because
yeah.
it doesn't...
And we don't do this.
It's come up in conferences where we've talked about it, right? Where people are afraid of giving feedback. And it's not part of what we normally teach, but we have had discussions about folks just sit down and script it out. If
yeah.
you're afraid
right.
to give feedback, just script it out. And the fact that you've kind of institutionalized
yeah.
that... in your training right. is really, yeah. really cool, I think.
The most important objective for us is that our managers actually go and do what we're telling them to do. Right, that's key. Are they going to actually practice what we teach? And we figure from a design perspective, if they're actually, the more planning they do, the more preparation in the session they do, to actually prepare themselves, so they literally have a script, they can go home with it, they can practice it the next day, they can do it, and that's how we try and transfer what they learn in the classroom to right. on the job.
And if they do it once, they're more likely to do it exactly. more in the future,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been saying for years, I've been coming to Wall Street for years, and I've said it over and over again. We know we're not going to get a banker to go, oh yeah, suddenly I want to become a great manager.
Right.
But almost all of them, and particularly as you become director and so on, and you have people that you're responsible for, they know they have to be a pretty good manager in order to achieve.
Yes.
In order to be a great banker, you can't do it all yourself.
Yes, exactly.
We find that true in so many industries where people want to be in product sales or they want to be a great marketer. But they also begin to learn, I can't achieve what I need to achieve unless I can marshal the forces of other people. And that's why we make our stuff so actionable. So Absolutely. It's just thrilling to hear you. And I love the fact that you're doing it a little bit differently than we do, because you know your audience even better than we do.
Yep.
You're tailoring it to what you know they would want. That's exciting. That's exciting.
No, we're thrilled. And the program continues to get traction. We now have some of our most senior executives co-teaching it with the folks in HR, so you know, we think we've got a lot to do here, and a lot of potential still.
Good,
it's awesome.
Thank you for joining us. We asked you to come over, and we had breakfast and visited, and you had to listen to us do the cast. So it means a lot that we have folks of your caliber that trust our stuff. We talked at breakfast about what the total audience is for our work, and we're thrilled that people like you and Credit Suisse trust us with helping you make your folks better.
Well, thanks for the opportunity to hear the cast and to talk with you guys. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, everyone. That's it. We'll see you next week. Have a great one. So long.